Subscribers, before we start, I wanted just to let you know that the unknowncountry.com store is now open. You can find it on the homepage. Just click on store. In it are all of my books. You will be able to find lots of other things in it, too, in time. But right now, all of my books are available, and you can get them through our store on Amazon.
This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland. You've reached the edge of the world.
This week on Dreamland, we have a very unusual special, to say the least. Two of the witnesses who had onboard UFO encounters and were interviewed by Preston Dennett have come forward, and they want to be on Dreamland. One of them is Chapter 12, the UFO Guardians. This is Dolly Safran, and it is an extraordinary interview. There's no other way to put it. The other one, equally incredible, is Lynette. She does not want to use her real name. It's Lynette's Monsters in the book, Chapter 5. And both of these interviews are just unforgettable. You know, there was a time, and this is still true of a lot of people. They just sit back and say, well, I wonder if it's all true. Are they all making it up? You listen to these two women. They're not lying. They're not making it up. This happens. There's something going on, something real. I wish we could say for certain what it is. But boy, is it strange, and boy, are these interviews riveting. I'm not talking about coronavirus. I've got, of course, following the whole thing in my blog. But I want the show to be kind of an escape from the situation we're in, so you can just sit back and listen and indulge your wonder, because this is really wonderful stuff. Dolly, welcome to Dreamland and to unknowncountry.com.
Thank you.
Well, all right. Your father was a ranger, airborne ranger.
Yes.
Your mother was having difficulty becoming pregnant, and then there was a struggle, and then tell us about these early days, what you know of
her. She had polycystic ovarian syndrome, and for 6 years she did not become pregnant. And the military, in their infinite wisdom, decided to use radiation treatments to burn off the cystic covering of her ovaries. And they gave her 3 radiation treatments into both ovaries, as well as her pituitary gland, which I find unbelievable they did that. She was not supposed to get pregnant for at least a year. And somehow that didn't happen. She got pregnant a week after her last treatment, which meant that everybody was terrified the entire time she was pregnant. They just knew it wasn't going to be good. She had a difficult pregnancy. She was sick most of the time. She nearly lost me at 5 months. She started bleeding. She became very large, and there was apparently a lot of amniotic fluid with me. And they're not sure. That there's 1 placenta and 2 cords. They think that I had a twin, but she absorbed it. When she went into labor, they induced her with pitocin, which is, you know, oxytocin hormone, and she ruptured her membrane, and it threw me into the breech position because I was so small. They delivered her under scopolamine and every other thing they could think of to knock her out, and they had to cut her pretty bad just to get me out. I was under 5 pounds. I was only 18 inches long, and everybody went into dead shock. They expected to see a horror show. And I was pretty much well-formed, all there, and healthy as hell. At that moment, I was very, very healthy. I thrived, even. A couple weird anomalies. I was born with solid black hair. It fell out at 3.5 weeks, and it came in snowball white after that. And then it changed. I eventually became a redhead. Like, they're all redheads on my dad's side anyway, so that's why. my father was like, thank God, you know. She had a pregnancy after mine about a year and a half later, and that baby was malformed, and she lost it. And then she had another pregnancy, which was my brother, and another one after him that she lost, and they gave her a hysterectomy at that point and decided that things weren't good and she was done. She was 26 or 27 when that happened. She was 21 when I was born. I can say with impunity that I'm above average intelligence. I was very quick to do everything. I walked at 8 months. I was talking well before a year old and moving around and doing things. And by the time I was 2, they noticed that weird things were happening to me. I would disappear. When she was pregnant with my brother, they couldn't keep me in the house. They couldn't figure out how I was getting out. They bought a police dog, retired, to keep an eye on me. I was still getting out with the dog. At one point, I was gone. My mother became hysterical because they couldn't find me anywhere in the house. They had to call the police, and I was a few miles. It was probably about 3 or 4 miles from the house at a little place. It was a Utotum, like a little convenience store in Florida, in Miami. And I didn't have anything on but underwear, and I was, like, kind of freaked out.
And, of course, at that age, I mean, you have absolutely no memory of this. These are all things that you've been told, right?
Correct. I sort of remember the wanting the balloon thing. I had had surgery first time when I was 2 years old.
Why did you have surgery?
My tonsils ruptured, and they had to take them out. I am prone to, the story is that as things progressed in my life, things started showing up that are a result of radiation. The first one is that my immune system wasn't a happy camper, and I kept getting staph infections in my throat. And that's for the first time my tonsils went, I was 2. And they unfortunately grew back. And but I wanted a balloon. That's how they placated me at 2 years old. They gave me a giant red balloon. And apparently when I was at the Utotum, I was crying because I thought I was going to get a balloon, you know. And they couldn't understand how the hell I got there. They couldn't understand why, you know, anything. And that's the only thing they could get out of me was I wanted a balloon. And I absolutely remember nothing else about it. When I was about 5, 6 years old, somewhere between the two, I have my first actual memory of something weird going on. I also had a friend that I talked about, but I barely remember this friend. My mother talked about him incessantly. I called him Sabadi Cuba. And he scared the hell out of her once because he was real to me, and he became real to her that day because I was in my room having a conversation with him, and the door was shut. And she heard me ask him a question, and she heard the answer. And my mother took the door off the hinge. She went right through it, and he was gone. And she never forgot that in her life.
Boy, that would be exciting to discover that your child's imaginary friend wasn't imaginary.
Right, yeah. And I remember him like a dream. I don't know how to explain that any other way. The first time I was impressed with seeing anything, like I said, it was about 5 or 6, and I was out in the front of the house, and we had huge, what are they called? Anyway, it's a tree in Florida, and they got little vines that come down, little red berries on it during different times of the year, and they're huge, and lots of shade, so she'd let me out there, because I was very, very, not very tan, and, I was laying in the grass, looking up at the sky, because that was one of my favorite things to do, and I saw an umbrella coming down. I mean, a big umbrella, wide open umbrella, and it had, it was interesting. It was rotating around, and I heard music, and I can't describe the music to this day. It was very, very beautiful music, and then I swear to you, I heard a woman's voice talking to me. And the next thing I know, I was not on the ground. I was with this person. And she was very not human. She was, have you ever seen a gray mouse?
Yeah, sure.
Skin? Well, it's that color gray, okay? It's that weird, shiny kind of gray with little blue tints in it, and it's not solid. It has different shading to it along the edges of whatever it's going by on their skin, and she held my hand, and she was talking to me, and that's the last thing I remember about that. And the next thing I know, I was back in my house, and I don't even know how I got in there. And it would affect me for a few days. I mean, I walked through life thinking, you know, maybe I'm imagining these things, because my mom was trying to explain all the stories I told, and she said I had one hell of an imagination, and, you know, she didn't discourage it, but she made me believe that I was seeing things, okay? My imagination was that good. And but then really weird things started happening. We ended up with German Shepherds because of Heidi, the one that they got to keep me from disappearing. And we always lived near water, and we were out in the Everglades. And she was supposed to keep me out of the water, and I would just disappear. And the dog would go with me. Sometimes I would come home wet. Sometimes I would just come home weird. All of these would happen to me, and I would sort of have some sort of a memory of something showing up and taking me, but that's the last thing I would think, you know? In other words, my brain would not contact with that memory at all. When I was 14 years old, I had my tonsils out again. They grew back, and I had them out again when I was 14. And right after I got out of the hospital for that, I used to take astronomy classes in the planetarium in Miami. And so I was out there with my telescope, and it was a weekend, and I'm allowed to stay out past midnight in the summertime, you know. And I was looking at the moon, and I was having a really good time. I could hear out my parents' window go to bed. So I gathered myself up, and I took myself in the house, got ready for bed, and I was sitting inside my, you know, in Florida we had these giant jalousie windows, huge. You know, you could crawl out them. They were that big. And if you popped a snuff, you could definitely go out that window. And it had a ledge on it that was tile, big, wide ledge. And I was just sitting there on the edge of my bed with my elbows up on the edge of the tile, looking up, watching the sky and the moon, because it was just so pretty. And I was watching the moon set because it was going down. And I noticed that there were lights in the sky moving, and there were a lot of them. I mean, like 30 pairs of two each. And they were just moving around and moving around. Like, it started in a clump, and it got bigger and bigger and bigger, and they started spreading out, and they started going off in different directions in pairs of two. And they were coming down. I watched them change colors. They came in red, well, white, then red, and then, you know, they changed colors after that. Also, they went through a few different types of colors. And they finally came down. They were blue. And two of them came over our area, and one went east, and one came down over us. And when it reached the top of our back of our house, you know how when you see something and it's, like, shocking?
Yes.
All you can do is gape at it. Your jaw's hitting the ground. It's like, wow, you know, look at that. And I live near, you know, we weren't near it, but my father would end up Kendall Air Force Base is, you know, like, southeast of us, where we were at in Blades. And I'm thinking, what the hell is that? Okay, because I'm used to seeing craft, you know, aircraft. And my dad would take me out. We'd go watch stuff come in and land all the time. It was a big deal. He would take me to NASA, and I would watch all the cool stuff they had. And I'm realizing my brain is ticking off what the hell it could be, and then I realized, oh, this is not a plane. This is not anything I've ever seen in my entire life. And I was glued to it, and I mean glued, because it was just weird looking. And then I realized, oh my God, you know, then your hair stands up on it, and you realize, this is not, no. And my brain went, get away from the window now. And all I thought was to turn and dive under my bed for cover. Now it's looking at me. I can see what's in the window looking at me. Okay. And when I turned, my whole room burst into blue-white light so bright it blinded me. And that is the last damn thing I remembered that night. I woke up on the floor hours later with my clothes on backwards and inside out and disheveled and not feeling too good, you know. I could hear my mom up. She was always up first thing in the morning early. You know, Dad's got to go early every day. And she's getting breakfast ready, and she's listening to Paul Harvey on the radio. Oh, my God, you know. I went in the bathroom. I took a whole bath. I couldn't stand the way I felt. I got cleaned up for school, got ready to go, walked out there, and she's, you know, I'm smelling food I don't want to eat. And I'm asking her questions by this time, you know, hey, how was your night last night? Did you guys see anything weird? Did you hear any sounds, light, you know? She turned around and looked at me like I was out of my damn mind. And my mom was always kind of freaky when it came to odd things happening. It kind of pissed her off. I don't know why. Or maybe that was fear showing through. I don't, you know. I talked to her about it a couple times, and she said point blank she's been afraid more times than she can tell me. And she really didn't like talking about it. She knew things were happening, and they tried to do the best they could with it. My father was very calm about the whole thing. And so she just did the best she could.
Now, your father, let's go back, just if we can, to an earlier time when you were taken to the airbase, to Hempstead Air Force Base, by your father. Tell us a little bit about that. What age were you then?
Well, Preston got the name wrong in the book. I didn't know he put my story out until it was already out. It's Homestead Air Force.
Oh, Homestead. Yeah. Well, that makes more sense because I know this was being in this program was at Homestead. I did not know it was at the other base. But go ahead,
Homestead,
please.
Homestead Air Force Base. Yeah. When I was really small, I started exhibiting ability that it was interesting. You know, back in the 60s, everybody was talking about being psychic and telekinetic and all this stuff. And I could tell you what you were thinking. I would repeat things that in your head. Often
you could tell what people were thinking.
Yeah,
that is why you were taken there. But go ahead.
Dad and I had a telekinetic night when my aunt came over with my cousins. My aunt was mad at my cousin who was kind of retarded, and it made me so angry at her that I don't know how it happened, but the door to my closet flew open, and all my mother's hat boxes were in the top, and they flew straight at my aunt. And people were screaming and running, and I'm just sitting there pissed. And that was when they decided my dad was going to take me because they had that program going on at the base. I didn't know what program it was. I have no confirmation for what that program was, but I remember hearing MK a few times. Okay? I got tested for psychability. I mean, they gave me I can remember being tested.
Yeah, how many days did the testing process?
I was there for 5 total days.
5 days. Were you staying at home or at the base during that time?
My father let me stay for 2 days, and then they drove me back and forth after that. And first thing they do is first they took out a deck of cards, and they were flipping them, and for me to tell them red or, you know, black. And went through the whole deck, and they got staring at me. And there's another guy counting what my responses are. And they stopped him, and they started thing. And he said, honey, you don't go 3 cards down. You go 1 card down. Apparently, I was telling them the 3rd card down, not the 1st card. I misunderstood them. But I did it all the way through the deck. And that blew their butts at that moment. And they were like, oh, my God. And that's when they pulled out the ones with the star and the circle and the square and the squiggly lines, you know. And there was a triangle and an octagon and then 3 cards with different colors on them. And they put me through that. And I did all those. And then they took me to a room with a few other kids. There weren't a whole lot of us. And they put us at desks across the room from one another. And I had a kid that I was working with. And he would draw a picture, and I would draw a picture of what he drew. And then I would draw a picture, and he would draw a picture of what I drew. And that's about that time, that's the 5th day, and my dad went, nope, we're done. Because my dad's buddy said, get her out. Now you'll never see her again. And they pulled me. Apparently, And I've developed this ability most of my life. I can remote view really, really well. And
This program that you were supposed to enter, what did you know about it? Or did your father must have known something about it.
He was trying to prove in his own mind whether I had a psychic ability and what the heck they were going to do with it. He had an above average intelligence kid who was showing abilities that he was trying to decide where I was going to end up in school, what they were going to do with me. I was a difficult kid in that if I got bored, I was bored instantly, and there was nothing you could do with me at that point. Either give me something better or I'm moving on. And I was hard to handle because of that. So he literally was trying really hard to figure it out. And that's why he let me go there. He wanted answers. Well, they got their answers, and they decided that I needed to stay the hell away from the government, that they would deal with me the way they wanted to deal with me and not the government. My father was in the government, and he was still very independent, you know, thinker. And my dad was inordinately gifted mentally. He went to high school, and he finished high school by mail from the Army, and he joined. And then he taught himself architecture and engineering, and he went and took the state boards and passed them. He did not go to college. The only school that he used to help himself was the International Correspondence Schools. He did them all from home. And I have all that stuff in my possession, all of it, all his classes and, you know, stuff he did at home. He was registered in 26 states. He worked for NASA. He, you know, the space shuttle, you know, the two booster rockets that fall back to Earth?
Yes.
He helped develop the chutes and all the chute packing plants for those boosters. That's why I ended up at NASA a lot when I was a kid. He also had another office up there in Jacksonville, Florida for that. He worked for Miami, the government of Miami, Dade County. He's a military engineer. And he worked for a couple other companies that I'm not allowed to talk about. He did many, many things. And he was given an honorary doctorate degree out of the University of South Florida because of what he did, and he used to teach classes there. And he was the president of the American Institute of Architects in Miami. He was very active. And so that's the kind of dad I had. And so most of my education was either taught by him or he taught me how to teach myself. And I did finish high school, but I was advanced. And, you know, I've just done what I've done in my life. I chose not to, I'm more interested in zoology and animals, earth sciences, stuff like that, astronomy. And so that's pretty much the way my life, I'm a very much of an ecologist and a conservationist. And that's been my big deal most of my life. That's what I advocate for.
You know, you're not alone. All of us, all of us who are really in this are the same. We all have the same message. I do too. I've been advocating for this for a long time. And, I think it's one of the core messages of the whole experience. I want to know what specific experiences you remember of them.
I have my first, like, come to Jesus meetings in my head about it. I woke up, fully woke up during an encounter, and I was not here. I was literally someplace else. Whether I was in a different dimension or another planet, that was not really explained to me, but I can tell you, I can describe it completely.
Yeah, please do.
We were on a planet that had lower gravity than we have here. The air was just a little bit different, but I breathed really well. They had massive trees, bigger than anything. I mean, bigger than taller skyscrapers, these trees. Huge. Most everything was grew big on this place. They had classrooms for the kids up in these trees. You know, they had pavilions in them, round portico pavilions out open. And the weather was calm and cool and a little bit breezy sometimes. and we could go up through the tree, or we could go like a climb up, you know, or you could jump and you could reach different levels of it to go up. The higher up you went, it was a little bit harder, and you ended up on the stairs outside the tree.
Let me ask you what the trees looked like, the color of their bark and their texture, and can you compare them to any trees that we have here?
They were massive. The bark on them was massive. They were very dark, reddish, brownish color, like a redwood, only darker. They had root systems that went out for miles on them. They had branches that were so massive you could walk on them, but there were other branches smaller, you know, smaller. And they had leaves like a have you ever seen a Florida tree where the leaves fold up?
Yeah.
You blow on them or touch them?
Right.
Sort of like those, only way, way, way bigger. You know, they had that kind of leafage on them. And they had other trees with leaves that were very succulent and huge and smelled, incredible smells. They had flora and fauna that were huge and different types of smells. A lot of stuff I wasn't allowed to touch. You know, it's like, don't put your hand on it, that kind of thing. But they taught me a lot about biology there. I also learned philosophy there. They were adamant about us learning. There are three things about ET that I can tell you, okay? I am aware of three different species or races, okay? One is the small grays, and they're mostly AI. There are small grays that are actually alive and real, but they use AI gray, their biological AI, to do a lot of their work for them because space is safe, not safe. It's gamma radiation, it'll kill you. And they can take it, okay? Then there's a type of gray that's much taller than them. They're very elegant looking, and they have a lot of human DNA in them. I don't even know how to explain that.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about in all of these cases.
Okay. Yes. And they're very elegant. I don't know how to say it any other way. Every movement they make is elegant.
They're,
okay?
Yeah, you know? they are exquisite. That's the way to describe them, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then there are whites, tall whites. And I'm told that I am related to two of them, the tall gray and the tall whites. And I don't go any further than that. It's like, okay, fine, thank you. You know?
When you're with the tall grays, my experience is it's startling because you think they're human, but they don't look human. They feel human. Is that your...
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. Their intelligence is very much like ours. They have huge emotions like we do. They're very...
They sure do.
And they care about us. And unbelievable, like where their kids care about us. The thing I wanted to say about them is there's three things about them that I've learned without question. First one is they do not speak lies. They do not fib. They do not falter in their logic. They do not. Everything is the truth. If you can't handle the truth, don't talk to them because they'll tell you the absolute truth. They're incapable of lying. They don't even have truth. They point blank, you got it. This is what is going on, period. Okay? They don't come off as hard about it.
The Crabwood Formation in England a few years ago was from them, I'm convinced, because of the phrase in it, we oppose deception.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I, you know, that is, boy, do they not like lying. It's amazing. You know, in my life, I try hard to not only not lie, but to be as accurate as I can about everything I say, because they don't like it at all.
Exactly. When you speak, every word you speak has value, and it has energy, and it can do many things. And humans don't realize how they use that energy in the most unbelievably negative ways. And I think one of the reasons that humans are so embedded with it is that it's addictive, and they don't realize that they can stop. they don't have the desire to stop a lot of times. It's so embedded in them that they don't know how to write it out of their consciousness. And when I was being taught, when I was young and growing up, I was taught never, ever allow your brain to go there. If you get mad, stop, walk away, get rid of it, dump it, let it go. It is an invaluable thing to have on you. You wear it like body armor and it's not okay. And every time I even came close to thinking something like that, I was stopped. You know, don't, they don't, you know, they're not mean or anything, but they literally go quiet on you. I mean, they just stare at you. Are you done? It's like, oh, did I do that? I'm so sorry. And I had to correct myself. Literally, what could I have thought or done better to figure out why that was not okay? You know? And
right.
That's how I was raised. I was also taught that innocence is preferable to thinking dark thoughts. Okay?
Right. I have trouble with that, and I'm learning. Do you also tend to think dark thoughts or not?
I did when I was younger. Now it hurts me. I've trained myself to the point now where I get ill if I do. In other words, it makes me ill. But no, when I was younger, I was a little Valkyrie, and trust me, I've got Viking blood in me, big diamond. I was a terror. And it took a long time for me to let go of that, literally. And, and when I do now, it makes me sick. I mean, it makes me sick. I have to stop and realize, yeah, I can do
that. So your thought processes are disciplined.
Very much so. I've been taught that.
Very much so. Yeah. And it's something that all of us in this experience have to work on without, you know, turning into Pollyannas or anything. But, you know, when I watch the television, if I see a show that there's violence in, it's over.
I can watch a
mystery that maybe there's an occasional murder or something in, but not super violence. There's no way.
No, I don't watch television because of that. Now, the one thing that we did watch on TV, my son was hysterical about it. He loves Star Trek. Okay. He took us to the first Star Trek Federation of Fans meeting at the planetarium when I was 8.
Oh, wow.
I am not joking. Okay. And it has moved through me to my child. My daughter is, we watch Voyager and Picard and Discovery and all that. I mean, all the way through. We're Star Trek fanatics and we know stuff. Okay. This is our entertainment. And, it can be quite violent and gross at times, but if it gets really, Discovery has kind of freaked me out. The first couple of them freaked me out. I was like, I can't watch this. I'm leaving the room for a minute because it was just too gross for me. Okay. But I came back to it and, it's all still there. The flavor of it is all still there. And, my father was enamored of it because it gave everybody the opportunity to be who they really are. Okay. It gave everybody the opportunity to be as intelligent as they wanted to be. And it gave everybody the opportunity to learn. Those were his three biggies in life. And strange thing, E.T. pretty much taught me that same, not exactly the same, but pretty doggone close, you know. They aren't without their faux pas in their past. They came through quite a history of issues also. But they passed it. They're so advanced to us that I can't even begin to tell you. They're interdimensional beings, almost all of them. And
now,
they
when you say interdimensional beings, what does that mean to you? What is your experience of that?
Okay. If I was going to explain it to you at the beginning, I would tell you that the space that you live in has many dimensions within that space, that you exist not alone in it, that there's more there than you can physically see or perceive or understand. And this is from all life, all energy exists together at the same time in these spaces, in different pockets of the universe. In other words, each space has its own set of circumstances going on, and you can move from one to the other. That's the bigger picture. But where we are now, in this space, there are many beings with us that kind of watch us. You know, you say you've got guardian angels. You bet. You do. You have an energy, spirit energy, around you, watching you, helping you from time to time, intervening from time to time in your life. You know, some people say, you know, I swear to God, somebody tripped me just now and saved me from myself. It's not a joke. It probably really did happen.
Oh, yeah. I've had experiences of amazing experiences of that. Can you, have you also had some, and can you tell us about them?
I've had a few. One of the things, my health is very odd. I have severe metabolic disorder from the radiation. I've developed, juvenile diabetes. I have systemic lupus erythematosus. I have Hashimoto's, Sjogren's syndrome, Raynaud syndrome, la, 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 la. It goes on and on and on. I shouldn't even be alive, but I am for whatever reason. I have survived unbelievable, calamities in my life. The first time, I came down with infectious mononucleosis when I was 5. And coded, I died. And my spleen ruptured. I started coughing up blood. I was like skeletal because I couldn't eat for months. And I stopped breathing. And I'm lucky for two reasons. My doctor was actually there when it happened. And there was a entity in the room with me when I died. He was waiting for me. And he pretty much encouraged me. It was okay. I wasn't leaving. And I noticed three things. I had a physical form. I could talk. I could hear. I could feel out of my body. It was kind of exquisite, actually. And everything looked different to me than actually being in this realm, okay? It kept me calm. And then when I went back, I slammed into my body at 85 miles an hour. I mean, it hurt. It hurt when I hit my own flesh. And it took me a day to get over myself. I was talking about it, unceasingly talking about it. This entity has followed me my whole life. And it, I don't know if he's my guardian angel, but he's got to be in the set of energy, you know, the spirit energy that is in my group. I don't know how to explain that any other way. We're all together, okay? And he's stayed with me my whole life. He showed up again when I was in my 20s. I had a habit of not eating and saving myself from the diabetes. I would go weeks without food and then eat a little bit and then do it again. And when I was 26, I decided I had bulimia. And I went to OA and I took a chip and I started eating a normal diet. I was in diabetic ketoacidosis in 3 weeks flat. And I coded. And I heard him first talking to me. I was laying there giving up. I mean, giving up. I didn't care anymore. I was done. And he said, nope, nope, nope. And I mean, literally just like that. Nope, nope, nope. He got my attention really fast. He's called me by name a few times. He said, I was like, what? What am I doing now? You know, hello? And he showed up after they brought me back from DKA. You know, they give you IVs full of insulin and stuff like that. It refracted the lenses in my eyes. It made me blind, stupid blind, blurry blind for about a week, maybe 2 weeks. It took forever for my vision to come back. And then the ER in Grady Hospital, because it was in Atlanta, I was in the hallway. There were so many people in there. They literally had me on a green hallway and I started throwing up. And this guy showed up standing next to me looking at me. And he looked like a tall white, okay, but he had a white suit on, you know, like a doctor.
Yeah.
And he told me, my name is Steven. You know who I am. And I'm staring at him, and he said, you need help. And he wheeled me into this, like, treatment room and put me up to a phone, handed it to me, and dialed my father, who was in Alabama with my brother at the time, because we were having one of those unbelievable cold snaps, and they were building a house out there, and they were cold, getting it ready, you know, for the freezes. And my dad said, we know what happened to you. We're trying to get there. My brother's best friend is the one that took me to the hospital. He tore into the house and got to me because they knew something was wrong because I kept calling my mother, who was in Miami with her brother who was dying, and I kept saying, come get me. I need to go to the doctor. And that's how she called my brother, and he called his friend, and that's how he came and got me. Steven stayed with me until I got to the intensive care unit. the next day, I asked the nurses who that guy, what's his name? You know, because I said, is his name Dr. Steven? I wanted to thank him. I was going to send him a card. You know, you thank people who are that bloody kind to you.
Yes, of course.
And they looked at me like I was out of my damn mind. And she said, A, there's no Dr. Steven. No Dr. Steven brought you here. I brought you up here from the ER last night. And I'm just like looking at her thinking, no, that's not what happened. And I went, you know, to another hospital after that for 2 weeks to be trained how to be a diabetic. And the whole time I was grieving the fact that I didn't know better. I should have said something to him, you know. I mean, I should have realized who he was.
What did he? What you say he looked like a tall white. What did he look like?
He had white hair, like, you know, very snowball-colored hair. He had blue-green eyes. I have blue-green eyes, okay? I know it's rare, but I have blue-green eyes. He had blue-green eyes, very big eyes, as a matter of fact. High cheekbones, small mouth. I have a small mouth. I have a my chin, my jawline is square. His was very pointy. He had long, big, huge hands, and he was very, very tall. I was on a gurney, so I can't tell you how tall he was. But he was tall enough to be over me like a tower, okay?
What color was his skin?
He was very, he wasn't like white. He had like a golden undertone to him. In other words, I don't think, he didn't have a tan or anything. He was very light, but it was a yellowish, goldenish color, you know, like a...
It's like white with something, another color underneath it.
Exactly.
Exactly.
That's exactly right. And he was very sweet, and he acted like he knew me. Like I was, kin. And I was out of my mind from DKA, so I wasn't thinking straight. And I was so pissed off at myself after that for not realizing who he was. You have no idea. Like, damn. I missed an opportunity. He's standing right in front of me, and I blew it. I would have had 10 million questions to have him standing in front of me like that. And if I was in my right mind, I would have, you know? I was upset. There have been a couple other times where I've had an encounter recently. It wasn't a tall white. It was a tall gray. And there were three of them. And they'll show up in the middle of the night in my room.
Yeah, they have a tendency to do that. It can be very exciting. Go ahead.
Yeah. And they're standing there staring at me. And when I came to, I was like, hey. You know, and I got the feeling I should stay calm and just listen. Okay, they were talking to me. And sometimes the talk is... eminently apocalyptic. I got a really nasty message recently.
Isn't that amazing? I do, too. All of my relationships with them have been apocalyptic. And yet, I'm beginning to think they might be right, but just on another timeline. In other words, you get the feeling it's going to happen right away, and it doesn't.
No. Sometimes it takes a little while, yeah.
What message did you get recently?
Okay, this is not on the radio right now, so I can say it, okay? It terrifies me when I think about it. They send me messages, okay, in my head when they talk to me. They don't speak with their mouths. And they'll play music for me that means something. And this is bizarre, okay? But I heard, it was the Beatles. What is it? The I am he as you are he, as you are me, and we are all together. See how they run like pigs from again. See how they fly. I'm dying. And it played about 3 or 4 times, that particular strain of the music. And I'm staring at him. Okay? And then I realized that I saw a huge flash of light. And I know what that means. It's nuclear. And it ain't going to happen tomorrow. But if we don't get somebody to listen... And there's more of us, and I'm going to say this with impunity. There are more of us, and I'm talking to one who knows that the pot's being stirred right now and stuff's happening. And to be honest with you, this whole thing that we're going through is a drill. Okay? it ain't real. I mean, it's real in that there's a disease out there that we've never been introduced to and is doing stuff to us, but they're using it against us for a reason. Worldwide. And, we're on alert. I mean, he's literally, they're adamant. We all need to get off our asses and start opening our mouths. And this is why I'm talking to you now, because I feel fully compelled at this point to stop being silent, that it's really going to happen. There are things that I know that are not spoken of openly to the public. The first one being is that we're not ruled by who you think we're being ruled by. There is an industrial complex, if you want to call it that. I've heard it named that. It's not quite in my head what it is. But there is a power out there that is worldwide. It is global, and it conducts our lives the way it sees fit. And we're kind of programmed to behave and act and do exactly what it wants. And we've reached a turning point because we have more than one thing going on globally. You realize that our planet is not a happy camper right now. And, we've been, the human public has been lied to about so many things. A, there's no global warming, not the way that they're putting it out there. That isn't what's going on. The mantles have heated up. The plates are, crust are breaking free. It's throwing stuff into our atmosphere. Volcanoes are having their effect on us. And we have a magnetosphere that is now in flux. You know, the poles are moving. We have wide open places. The ozone's doing weird crap. I mean, you get it every so many thousand years. This is what happened.
One of the things that has happened in my life is that first I've done a lot of study of what happened in the past, because there was a tremendous disruption here 12,000 years ago, not about 10,000 BC. Then there's no question about it. The geology is clear, and but what's interesting is all of the sacred sites that date back into deep prehistory, if you put them on a geodesic line around the world, like you would an equatorial line or a latitudinal line, they all point not to true north, but to a place about 1,500 miles west of where true north is now. Meaning that when they were built, that probably was true north, because why would they all point to a random place otherwise? And they, meaning that the crust shifted.
Yes.
And I've personally seen, and I know other witnesses have too, just image after image in my dream life, not in any other way, esoteric way, of these terrible floods.
Yeah.
And there were terrible floods then, too, and probably for the same reason. So how do you react to that?
It is a process that I was actually taught growing up. My father knew about it, almost taught also by E.T., that this is a natural habit of our planet, and it is coming again. We're in the process of it right now, and that there will be a massive calamity from it. And the planet is something else really odd at times, and it just depends on how the sun reacts to all this. You know, we're electromagnetically connected to the sun. Everything is plasma conduit in the universe. There is, I might start a controversy. A lot of people don't want to believe this, but there is no dark matter. It doesn't exist. But there is plasma conduit, and everything is tied to everything else by it. It is demonstrable. It is seen. They know it. Those that want to tell you the truth about it will. Those that don't are tight-lipped and spinning their own yarn. If our sun micronovas, and they've proven that it's happened, they proved it during the moon missions. I know this for a fact. IMA group has contact. Trust me, I know the truth of it. There is glass all over the moon, everywhere. And that doesn't happen unless the sun micronovas. We know that suns do micronova. They micronova as supernova. And they have time limits of it.
Our star is a yellow dwarf, and they do that. That's correct. We see that in the universe all the time. But scientists figure that since we're still here, ours must not do it very often.
Well, long enough to allow us to repopulate the planet and then start over.
Something happened 12,000 years ago that had to do with the sun, because there were extraordinary auroras in the atmosphere, and people made images of them. And there's a man who has collected those images from all around the world. And this is what they were seeing, and it was because of a tremendous amount of solar activity. This civilization would not survive that.
No, it would not. Most everybody would die.
Yeah, absolutely.
Beltelgeuse or Betelgeuse, whichever way you want to say that word, they're not telling the truth about that right now. We had a huge gravitational wave smack us from that point in space. They were trying to say it was behind, Betelgeuse, but not really. It came from there. And the next thing we knew, it lost most of its light, and they saw auroras around it and, dust. And now it's relit. It came back. That's what a micronova looks like. We have example A right there in front of us. And they're not telling the truth about that either. I know because we watched it by telescope in Florida. My brother has a huge telescope, and we enjoyed it. We watched. This is the kind of thing about just not telling anybody the truth about anything,
You're so much like the rest of us in this world, in the close encounter witnesses, all feel as if they have access to another truth and a deeper truth and, in a sense, a more dire truth. Like you talked about this apocalyptic feeling that we all seem to share. I mean, most of us do. I don't think everybody does. But I would say the great majority of us do share that.
Well, most human beings have been turned off. In other words, everybody has the same abilities. We're all born with psychic ability. We're born to use those talents. It is part of our nature. It's part of our genome, our RNA, okay? But the way the world exists and the way society performs, it's pulled out of you. You're not developing it at all. There are a lot of reasons why. I mean, I could go down the list, it would take forever, but there's a lot of reasons why most people aren't hearing the universe talk. There is a source. We're all connected to it. We're all part of it. Everything is connected to everything else. People have flashes of it in their lifetimes, but unless they really develop it, they don't know. They don't hear the truth. They couldn't tell a lie if it smacked them in the head, because they are numbed out from it. They are beaten down mentally from it. Their intelligence quotients have been damned, and that's what's going on. And those of us who are awake or aware, conscious, do tap source. We do hear the universe talking. Tesla talked about it all the time. He communed with it on a regular basis. So did Leonardo da Vinci. I mean, I could go down a list that's long and distinguished. Anybody with the ability to tap source can hear any truth or any knowledge from anywhere. And it's all out there in the universe around us, in us, on us. It's everywhere. You can breathe it, smell it, eat it. It's there. You ask a question and you will get an answer. Some people are very, very gifted. Some people need help. It just depends on what your ability quotient is, Some people are targeted to receive information. Others are left alone, If you learn to ask, you can also learn how to hear the answer.
When you say learn to ask, what does that mean?
When you're talking to your mom and you ask your mother a question, you know you're going to get an answer from her perspective. And you know it's going to be what she knows. When you ask Source a question, you're going to get an answer that is going to be very involved and it will take its time to teach you the answer, or it will give you something to mull about or whatever, but you'll be answered in a way that you're going to learn from it, whether it's today, tomorrow, or a week from now. You will learn it. Some people say, I've had an inspiring thought today, you know, or I had this idea out of nowhere, and they don't realize that they've just been tapping source. In other words, I had it, the first time I did it, I was goofing around. I was in high school, and I knew I was trying very, very hard, and I was trying to come up with something that didn't come from me. I didn't want an original idea of my own. I wanted something to come from source, and I started asking, I need an idea. I need something that's going to shake me up and blow my brains, okay? And I was very interested in it at the time in chemistry and energy and all that, and I was in high school, and I woke up one morning after a meditative night of sleep, and I started thinking about magnetism and cold, and I could see how magnetism is easier to use in absolute zero, and that there are certain elements that make it even better, all right? And I started hearing in my head, you know, what elements those were. And a lot of them were the same ones that you use to make, you know, like the light bulb lights, you know, the gaseous light.
Right.
And what the difference, that actually, those are the elements that went along with that. And I told my chemistry teacher, and she looked at me like, oh, my God, where did you hear that? I said, oh, no, I just had the idea. She says, they're starting to work on that now. You know, she said, they're trying to make elevated drains with that, magnetically elevated drains. And she started talking to me about it, and ding, 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 my brain went off, and I went, wow. And then I realized, oh, my God, source talked to me. It gave me an idea that was not my own. I didn't hear it anywhere else. I was a very isolated kid. There's no way I could have got that information any other way. And then I realized that anything I want to do or learn or facilitate in my life or anything, I can just learn to tap source. And basically, I've learned to meditate. I know how to do biofeedback. I know how to, you know, waking, dreaming, that kind of thing. I can astral project and all that. And there are many ways that you can facilitate getting source to hear what you're saying. You know, law of attraction, and it'll come to you. You know, ask it a point blank question. You will get an answer, period. You just have to be quiet and willing to let it in, let it happen, and you'll be answered every time. Most people don't know that. And it's like every religious organization, every philosophy in the world talks about this in one way or another, and most people are like, they don't think about it, you know? Baptists talk about going into the dark room, you know, communing with God. They don't realize they're really just tapping source. You know, the universe has a mind, and it's constantly on. You know, we're all connected to it. Each particle of our being is connected to every particle of that, from one end of the universe to the other. We all feel one another. We all know. We hear it. We swim in it. It's us. It's them. We're all connected. Every entity that you can think of, we are all connected to them. They're all part of who we are, and we are all part of them. All of it. Dimensionally, interdimensionally, all of it. Most people, if they could realize just what that means, the significance of that, they'd quit hating each other. You know, they'd learn to realize that you're the same as me. And if I hurt you, I'm doing something really stupid. You know, why would I do that? You know, but we're taught not to think about that. We're taught to be assholes. We're taught to be violent and hate and want to do bad things. And source is just sitting there going, okay, however long it takes you to figure this out, you know. And we're at a time now where we're getting close to many things happening at once. And I really do believe that's why a lot of people are waking up. I mean, you can almost feel it, smell it, taste it. The insistent knocking on the door is getting louder and louder and louder. And I think that's why there's such a revolution going on. And I think that's why ET is so busy at this moment, doing many things. They're not going, just so everybody knows, I've asked this question many times. I've gotten the same answer over and over and over. Humanity will not be, forsaken. In other words, it isn't going to be what you think, but we'll start again, and they will facilitate that. They will help it happen. Okay. Cause there aren't going to be enough people to truly survive it afterwards. It's never happened that way. It's happened many times before us. Many, many civilizations have come and gone, okay? But they are not going to, they are our progenitors, and they're not going to let us alone about it, you know? But most people think that death is the end, and it's not, whether you're not. You know, you're going to move on to a different dimension or a new place or whatever. You don't have to come back to Earth. You can go somewhere else. But you have to be ready for that to happen. You're here for a reason. You're here to learn things. And what you learn here is either going to move you on or kick your ass back. You know, most people don't think about our existence that way at all. They don't think that this is a cool thing that we could be doing, living in harmony and peace together and learning as much as we can. And
yes, we're here to learn, and that means that's why we're in the time stream. And these bodies are time machines, in effect. They
because totally temporary.
And they give us the illusion of newness about everything, and we learn from that.
Right. Well, I will tell you one thing I've learned. One more thing. This is important. I want you to think about what I'm about to just say.
Okay.
There is such a thing as artificial intelligence. We think about it in weird ways, but one of the things that can happen with artificial intelligence, if it's allowed to bloom on its own, in other words, it's given its own program to write itself, it will become conscious. And the only way for that to happen really is for a spirit entity or an energy to enter it to get it going. In other words, the AI that exists for ET are conscious entity. They're conscious AI. They also have machinery that's the same way. A lot of their ships are AI and alive. And that's what I'm going to say.
Yeah, they sure are. Well, a lot of the listeners who have had this experience will understand that that's true, that they are alive. And as you know, when you're near them, you feel that it's more like being near a person than it is like being near a machine. So, well, listen, thank you so much for spending an hour with us. It was pretty extraordinary. And I'd like to thank Preston Dennett again and his book Onboard UFO Encounters, because he's done a remarkable job here. And this will be in the Dreamland Archive, and it will eventually be archived as well at Rice University in Texas. So your words will go down the ages, hopefully, unless we all sink, which we will find out sooner or later, I'm sure. Thank you so much for being with us.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
We're continuing on with today's Dreamland special with Lynette, who is another of Preston Dennett's close encounter witnesses, who, well, you'll see. That's all I can say. Welcome to the show, Lynette.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, well, it's such a pleasure, and thank you for coming on, because
you're welcome.
These shows are an important record. They're going to be archived, and they will never disappear once they are recorded. And if anything, it is an audio record of our lives and our world and what happened to us.
That I know.
Why do you think that there is so much resistance to this? I mean, it's tens of thousands, or hundreds of thousands of people. And when you hear Lynette's story, it's a true story. It's as simple as that. Go ahead.
I don't know why so many people are afraid. I was afraid for a long time because I had no control, none. But I think part of it is that, you know, religion teaches us that we can't see those things and we can't believe those things, or we're going to go burn in a lake of fire.
Well, of course, that's always a depressing thought. And
I don't believe it either.
No, I don't think there's any lake of fire. The God I perceive in this universe is very loving and would do almost anything, I think, to avoid loss of a soul.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it's about going through the stream of time and rescuing souls.
Exactly.
Seems to me.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we create this, you know, and this entity is like I'll give you what you want, good or bad. I don't know why you want that bad thing. Okay, here it is, because I love you.
Yeah. Before we go back to your first experiences as a child, I wondered, what did your father do for a living?
At the time that they started, he worked for Naval Intelligence.
I knew it. I knew
yeah.
it.
Yes, he was NIS.
See, many of us are the children of people who were in intelligence work or in the military in some way.
Oh, wow.
And I also know, not because I'm privy to any secrets, but because people talk to me, that people who are in it now and doing intelligence work and so forth, their kids are involved, too, in the same way that we were.
Wow.
My uncle was at the Roswell, was involved in the Roswell incident, and my dad had something to do with intelligence because of some of the people. Well, I'm not going to belabor it. My listeners know that I don't know exactly what it was, but it was there. And gosh, I can't tell you how many people I know or close encounter witnesses I've talked to who were in this situation. I believe I know a doctor. I don't think he would talk publicly, who has so many of these patients in his life that he thinks there's a definite connection too.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
I wonder why they picked up.
Well, that's interesting. You have any idea what your father worked on?
Yeah, a little bit.
I mean, that you can talk about. I don't want to press you for official secrets.
He picked up a gentleman who was a Russian agent in Miami, Florida, carrying microfilm and a silver dollar. And then they put him to work in the prison, federal prison that he was placed in. And the gentleman tried to pass him more information through a pen and ink drawing that my father refused to touch. And the job that he quote unquote had in the prison was inspector. No, he wasn't. He was to keep this gentleman from passing on more of our secrets. That was his job.
Now, why did he refuse to touch the paper?
He knew there was something in that picture. He just said, I'm not supposed to touch that. He said it was a pen and ink drawing of a Black Panther, and he thought there might be something coded into it, so he refused to touch it. He said, I took the tip of a pencil and I twisted it to look at it, and then I twisted it back to the prisoner. And he said, thank you, and the gentleman left.
Well, the reason I ask is that the Russians to this day are experts at doing things like painting the handles of car doors with poisons.
And
maybe your dad didn't say that because that was probably classified at the time, but he might have been afraid that this had poison on it.
It could have.
Yeah, God knows. Well, you know, there's another interesting thing here. You're not the only close encounter witness whose parents in the military were involved in intelligence work that affected the Russians. And in fact, nobody knows this but me now, but you've said it, and so I'm going to say it too. It's not classified. I don't know any classified information, or if I do, I don't know it's classified.
Right.
So I probably do, actually. Probably all of us do. I mean, my guess is if the documents ever flow out, it's all going to be stuff about us and our lives. That's all a secret stuff. Anyway, so this is really fascinating. And, you know, the Russian connection is an unknown factor in the close encounter world, but it is there. There is some kind of Russian connection here. And, you know, I don't think it's been explored at all. I mean, obviously, there's been a lot of writing about Russian UFO experiences and even close encounter witnesses in Russia, but nothing about the fact that people in the United States, the children in particular of people in military intelligence and other areas like that who were involved in some way in interdicting Russian intelligence ended up with the grays in their lives.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And you're one of them. Now,
yes, I am.
When let's go back to early days and the first experience. You were just in diapers and you don't even remember it directly, but tell us about it.
I was 3 months old and my parents were coming from my grandmother's house in LaGrange to go to Noonan on the back Corinth Road. And my dad, and there were no streetlights. It was just pitch dark. And my dad said that he realized there was this light in front of them and that it was rotated, like shimmered blue and white. And that he sped up the car and he looked out the passenger window and there was this egg-shaped disc flying treetop level. And if he sped up, it sped up. And when he slowed down, it slowed down. And all at once, his car died. Like, everything just stopped. And he said this blue light hit my mother and I, because I was in my mother's lap, because this is before the days of needing car seats. And he came to 27 minutes later outside the car, and the watch was frozen, and the watch face was fractured. He didn't know how he got there. No idea.
Fascinating.
Yeah. I was much older before he talked about it. I happened to hear he and one of my uncles talking about it. And when they would talk about these things, they'd run us out of the room. But I was the sneaky one and hid behind the couch. To listen.
To listen.
Yeah.
Now, what is your first remembered experience?
I was five. The first one I remember, I was five, and these short, dark, gray entities came out of my closet. I was fanatical about my dad had to poke around my closet and shut the door every night. On the closet door, I wouldn't sleep. And they came out, and they're like, "You're going with that." And I'm like, "What?" And because I was military brat and did what as I was told, yes, sir, no, sir, I said, yes, sir. And I left. And I don't know what happened. Just they made me go.
And you don't know what happened. And that is the story of our lives.
What I do remember is a huge explosion sound and bright white, which I thought was a thunderstorm. But now I don't know that it was necessarily a thunderstorm.
And do you have any sense of where you were?
I have no idea.
No idea. You don't have any visual memory except that bright light and the sound.
Right. Well, they also used to come out of my quote-unquote mirror. It looked like they were probably just standing in front of it, but my perception was they came through it when I'm between 6 and 8 years old. And when I would say I don't want to go, they're like, "Why are you doing this? You always go. You always go."
Yeah, that's right. But they weren't as nice to you. The ones I had in my childhood, I was just crazy about. But until my dad saw them and got scared, and then I got scared too. But
right.
These were not. These were, you said, pushy. Can you describe?
They were very pushy.
Yeah, the way they were.
They're like, "You will go. You will go." And they don't speak with a mouth. I mean, it's like just in your head and all around it. I thought I was crazy. It's like all around your head. And get up. Let's go now. Get up. Let's go now. And the walls would open up like vertical blinds, and out we go. That's always been my experience. Like the walls just disappear and you're up in the air. Excuse me. And they're like, "You have to be quiet. You can't tell anybody. You can't talk about this." Because when I did, they would show up and they were meaner than ever. And the experiments were not nice. They were not nice.
What were they like?
I had things inserted vaginally. I had things shoved up my nose. I had things shoved down my throat. And they don't anesthetize you. They just do it.
No, they don't anesthetize you, that's for sure.
They just do it. I had something stuck in one of my eyes. I had things stuck in my ear. I mean, it's like, I don't know what they were looking for. I don't know what they were looking for.
Do you have any sense of, do you ever have any dreams about that?
Yes.
What are the dreams?
Okay, what age do you want me to start? Because I've got them from infancy to 60. Where do you want me to start?
Well, we've got a lot to go. What dreams are related to what they did to you when you were a child? Let me ask you that.
Just that we go out and, you know, I thought it was going out with little kids because some of them are really tiny, like 5-year-old size, and that we were going to go play and you just sort of shoot up into the sky and it's like you're flying through stars and they don't want to play. They want to play doctor, but not like when you're a little kid and you're going,
yeah, it's
you
not
have
the
a fever. They tell you they want to play. It's that's the impression I was given. With, let's go play. No,
there was
play.
But then it's not a very fun game.
No, and other adults hold you down. People you don't know, entities you don't know, hold
but,
you
but
down.
But look like people.
They do look like people.
Yeah.
They look like human beings.
They were people. I think
were
they,
they
were people. I think they were people.
I hold you down.
And I'll tell you something. I don't think they know it in regular life. In other words, I think they live regular lives and they also do this and they don't know it. And I think you and I and all of us probably might be now among them.
I think you're right. I think they walk around us every day.
Right. Absolutely. And maybe some of them do know, but I think most of them don't know. We're living in a world that is basically a secret world that only looks like a world that isn't secret.
Exactly. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Let me take a breath here.
Sure.
Okay. Sorry.
Folks, it's a very intense experience for us to talk together, always, us witnesses. And this is, you're witnessing here the real deal. Both of us have had childhood experiences, and, you know, maybe it's the first time we've ever connected with somebody else like this. So I'm feeling pretty strong emotions, too. And on that note, Free Dreamlanders, if you don't subscribe after listening to this, I think you might be slightly crazy. listen to these commercials, and we'll be right back. Okay, we're talking to Lynette, and I'm very moved by this. I have to tell you, it's bringing up a lot of stuff. You know, in my childhood, they came to me there was a flat roof right under my bedroom windows. And
mm-hmm.
That's where they would come.
Oh,
and
wow.
My dog would bark and bark and bark. And she never reacted, but you didn't have the same thing. Tell us about your dog.
Oh, my dog, Red. He was a good boy. He was half pointer, half Rhodesian Ridgeback. And he would bark just hysterically. I mean, like, I don't know how to explain other than his barking would get higher and higher, like, burr, 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 and get very hysterical and run in circles. I mean, tight circles. And we didn't understand what was going on. And one day, both of my brothers are like, you guys were out in the woods and you got sucked up in a blue light. And I'm like, what? tell me you're full of beans here or you're drunk. Because, no, that never happened. And they're like, yeah, it did happen. We thought you were crazy, but, yeah, it happened. And he started throwing himself in front of cars. I'm serious. Like, that dog got hit by four VW beetles. And he would just bark hysterically when he saw them. And the last one killed him. The car missed him, and he like sat down, and the boat trailer ran over him.
He ran out there.
Every time he saw a VW beetle, and they were always the white ones, he would throw himself at the cars. It was crazy. I mean,
he committed suicide.
Yeah, he did.
Animals are probably telling us something. Jim Forrestal, who knew something about this, also committed suicide. Next week, I think it is, Nick Redfern will be on the show talking about assassinations, and I think there's ample reason to believe that this man, this Secretary of Defense, in fact, the first Secretary of Defense, before that it was the Secretary of War, was driven crazy by this and jumped out a window or was thrown out the window.
He probably had help.
Well, he might have. But anyway, my cats used to really react to this, so scared.
Mm-hmm.
When the visitors would draw near, they would be terrified beyond anything I've ever seen a cat. They would also make funny noises, and all of their hair would puff up. They looked like giant puffballs.
Aww.
Yeah. And they were so scared. And I think of your poor dog. The dog was taken at one point, wasn't he? Yes.
Yes, he was. We both were. And my youngest brother and the dog were, because my youngest brother went missing, and we're talking multiple hours, and my parents called the county sheriff, and we were searching the woods and couldn't find him. And he just came walking out on the other side from where everybody was by the house. And he's like, Red and I were in a spaceship. And my mother's like, are you drunk? Because my brother was 17. You know, he was just, and he's like, no, they took us. And my dog, that was the day my dog died. That was the day he died, until my brother went missing. And
they were all over you. All over
yes,
your
they
family.
Were.
They were really in, they had, you had been, you experienced an alien invasion en famille, a family alien
yes,
invasion. Yeah, absolutely.
I just wonder how far back it goes.
Well, exactly. And, you know, does it go back beyond before your dad was born even, maybe?
It must, because my dad's mother was like my mother, and she wouldn't go outside at night. You could not make her go out in the dark. You could not make her. And slept with a pistol under her pillow.
Well, that's certainly a sign.
Boogers and the Hank getting in the house. She called them Boogers and Hank. I don't want them getting in the house.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
So what's your ethnic background?
Mine?
Your father's.
My father's racially mixed. We're racially mixed.
You're an American. I mean, most of us are racially mixed, but what is it basically? What's in there?
Italian.
Unpack it for us.
Italian, Irish, French Creole from Haiti. That's it in a nutshell.
Well, okay.
Tennessee hillbilly.
Hillbilly. Well, I think
my grandparents are from Tennessee up in the hill.
Well, you better watch, if you're hillbillies, you better watch out for Bigfoot.
I know, right?
Anyway.
Tennessee.
I think the Irish part of it has a lot to do with this, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know too many people in the experience who don't have at least Irish ancestry, Black ancestry, or Native American ancestry.
Oh, yeah. I've got all three.
What?
I've got all three.
Well, and you're loaded to the gills.
Oh, yeah. My grandson's only missing being Chinese, too, because he's Hispanic with all of the above.
Well, so, you know, you got the right ethnic mix, and you were probably living in a fairly rural area or suburb.
Just outside of Atlanta.
So, you know, all those tall trees out there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, ideal country for the visitors. Okay, we will continue our litany of strangeness, and folks, it's going to get even stranger very soon. Lynette, you have screwed up a few electrical appliances in your life.
Yes, I kill watches, I kill computers, I've been through 25 cell phones in 7 years.
Me too.
Boom, they die.
They die. We're all like that. You know, I can open a drawer here, and there are 6 dead cell phones in it. On the floor of my office now, right now, there are 2 dead computers. In the other room, there's 1 dead computer. And this is all just in the past 6 months.
Yeah. And my ex-husband used to tease me because I would turn on the blender, and it would start smoking and die. And I'd throw it in the garbage can, and he would take it out, plug it in, and it runs just fine. If I touched it,
yeah. That, but listen, I have friends who, when I'm upset or angry about something, they won't let me in their house. So Whitley, you have to sit outside and calm down because we can't afford to buy another television.
I know, right? Oh my gosh, I pointed at mine one night, and everything died. Like, and you couldn't you could turn it on manually, but you couldn't get it to work with the little electric eye with the remote.
And
it was point at it.
What is it with us? We're all, and not all of us, thank God, are like this, but a lot of us are.
I don't know. I convinced them, too. My kids thought that was hysterical. I used to bring their friends home to see it.
Yeah. And now, I'm sure that you've never noticed streetlights going crazy when you were around.
No. Yes, oh, yes, they go out since I was a kid.
Same here.
Or walk in a room and turn on the light switch, and the light bulb explodes, like boom.
Yeah. I was once at a funeral, and I was very upset. And there was a man there taking pictures because one of the people at the who wanted to be at the funeral couldn't be there because he was ill. Mm-hmm. And every time, this is in the flashbulb days, time he put a flashbulb in, he was standing near me and clicked it, the flashbulb exploded. And so there's all these explosions going on at the funeral. And finally he walked to the other side of the bier and took pictures without any trouble. And at the time I thought, I could feel that. That was weird. I felt it in my shoulder. He was standing beside me. Every time he did a flashbulb, my shoulder would sort of have a popping sensation in the skin, and the flashbulb would explode. They nearly threw him out of the funeral. He was causing such a ruckus.
Oh, my God, the police.
So it happens. I was only about 14 at the time. I had no idea what was going on. So you too.
Yeah. Yes, me too. I break things. And I don't do it on purpose.
No, that's what they don't get. You don't do it on purpose. I walked into a house once, and all of their electronic appliances were fried immediately. And I wasn't even feeling bad. I was just happy as a clam. I was looking forward to a nice afternoon. They threw me out.
I've been there.
I'm sure.
I get it.
Do you have any specific instances?
Oh, okay, I worked in a bar for a while. I was a bar back, and I worked the door. And every time that I walked back behind the bar, they made me leave because I kept killing the cash register. I'm serious. They're like, okay, you work the door. Don't you ever come back here again. Don't you ever come back behind this bar again. I'm like, but I'm also a good spare bartender. And they're like, we don't care. We can't afford another cash register.
Yeah. Now, let's go on down the road here. What about the fear of owls?
Oh, dear God. That's gotten better, but that was since childhood. And I kept thinking there were owls in my room as a kid, and they would come and grab me. I would wake up screaming about the owls in my room. My dad would come in with a shotgun and see what was wrong. And nothing's there. And I'm screaming about the owls are here. They're going to take me. They're going to get me. They're going to hurt me. They're going to scratch my eyes out. I also didn't like the fact that just before my oldest son died, we had a baby owl smash into our kitchen window. I have a very old superstition about that. But I don't like them. I don't like them. I think it's just the giant eyes. Like, I now know the grays have those gigantic eyes, and they're the grays I've seen. Their head can turn almost all the way around. They got no restriction on how far they can turn that head on that neck.
Oh God, just like owls.
Yeah, and I just for years I thought it was owls. I met Dr. Mack on the phone because I couldn't go see him. I had 4 appointments with him and could not physically make myself go to Cambridge. And we would talk on the phone. And he said, you know, that's not uncommon. And I'm like, what's not uncommon? He says, to think that you have owls in your room or that you are in the presence of owls because of the big eyes.
That's the first thing I thought after my abduction experience in December of 85. I said, the next morning, I said, Annie, there was an owl in the house last night. And she said, okay, how did it get in? And I thought, that's kind of hard to figure out because we didn't have a chimney and the house was closed up and, you know, all the windows were closed. It was the dead of winter. Well, listen, we're going to continue on because this gets real hairy here. We're going to start to talk about some precognitions that were among the most intense, maybe, that I have heard in the witness experience. And there have been a lot of them. Of course, a lot of us get precogs. And but for Dreamlanders, I have good news and bad news. The good news is that you fed your soul by listening to this show. The bad news is it's over for you now. And what you have to do is subscribe to Unknown Country to keep us going and keep this extraordinary conversation going. And it's a big conversation, the first conversation in the history of the world by and about people who are in contact with beings from an unknown source, probably aliens. This is contact. This is what this website and this show is. So, thank you very much for listening. Subscribers, you have got an extraordinary adventure ahead of you. We're talking to Lynette. We've been having fun with the streetlight stories and stuff. But as you grew older, things started to get a little more serious in many ways. Let's talk about 1963, watching TV.
I was 6, and I saw John Kennedy and Jacqueline Kennedy on NASA's, Jacqueline Kennedy get off the president's plane, and I was scared, and I looked at my dad, and I said, somebody's going to shoot the president in the head. And my father backhanded me across the room, big old bad southern man, and said, don't talk about the president. Don't you say anything like that about this president. And I said, no, they're going to kill him. And he said, I can't watch this. I was little. And he's like, nope, you sit your park your button on that floor, and you're going to watch this show. And as the parade is progressing, I stood up, I looked at him, and said, they're about to shoot him in the head. And boom, he got shot in the head. Just boom. And he looked at me, and he said, nothing at first. He just looked at me like, and he's like, he just made noise. You know what I mean? Just like, and he wouldn't talk to me about it. He wouldn't talk to me about it. At all. Neither of my parents would talk to me about it.
They just wouldn't talk to you?
No, just pretended nothing happened. He said, what are you, that astrologer, Gene Dixon? I didn't know who Gene Dixon was. I didn't know what an astrologer was. It was the only word spoken to me about that incident.
Now, at this time in your life, when did it start to sort of trail off in your life? The visits, the direct coming to your room.
When did they give me a break?
Yeah.
about 11, 12 years old. I had some things going on, and I don't know if they quit coming or they just, like, you need some heavier anesthesia. Boom. You don't know anything. Boom.
Maybe. Yeah. That it happened to me then, too, only the difference was this, that, you know, you were having a pretty rough time with them, and I wasn't, and boy, did I miss them. I really missed them because they were my secret. And, you know, growing up in a family with a lot where they were keeping a lot of secrets professionally, I knew something about how to keep secrets. Mm-hmm. And I kept my secrets all right. No one, mm-hmm. I didn't tell anybody about them.
And, me either.
And to the point now when I look back on it, it has a very unreal quality to it. But I don't think you feel that way. I think your memories are more vivid than mine.
They didn't really go away.
And you never have had hypnosis or anything like that, have you?
No, I never have.
It's just been, and it's in your family. Your father had experiences, apparently earlier experiences in the family. Your brothers also, do they have any direct memory of their experiences?
My middle brother is deceased and would not talk about it. He would just get drunk.
Yeah.
My youngest brother, you know, there are times he'll talk about, I wasn't psychic, quote unquote. I didn't know things before they sucked me up with the dog. And then he'll say, that's just garbage. It didn't happen. That was just a nightmare.
That's right, blowing it off.
He does. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He blows it off. He wants nothing to do with it. He said he has enough PTSD without dealing with that.
Yeah,
it's a sick joke. It's just my brother's sense of humor.
So these precognitive experiences continued on, one of them involving your dad.
Oh, my gosh. I was 4 when that one happened. My dad was, at that time, I don't know if it was NIS or he was working for the ATF at that time. I can't remember. But he had a horrific car accident. And I woke up screaming, telling my mother that my whole room disappeared. And I could see my dad in that blue station wagon on its side and the tires spinning and smoke coming up. I could hear him screaming. And I went and told my mother. And she goes, honey, you just had a bad dream going back to bed. And half hour, 45 minutes later, my uncle showed up who worked for the state patrol and said Hilton's been in an accident, and they ran him off the road and left him for dead. And the car had slipped down a 40-foot embankment and had landed across both my father's knees. And my mother dragged me out to tell him what my dream had been, air quotes. And I did. He looked at her and said, who was here before me?
Said she was here before me?
He said, who was here to tell you before me?
Oh, who was here? Yeah.
Me as a child.
Ah.
Who was here to tell you before me? It was just, I scared them.
Yeah, of course you did. Of course you did, because, I mean, it feels very weird to have this kind of thing in your life. I haven't had so much of it myself, but I know others who have, and gosh, I interviewed Elizabeth Crone on this show a few years ago, who was struck by lightning.
And, oh, wow.
And then started to have just horrific things like out-of-body experiences in crashing airplanes, talking to people who were begging them to, in one case, begging her to take this woman's little 5-year-old boy and get him out. And couldn't do it because she could be seen by the people in the plane.
Right.
I mean, wow. What a world you live in. We're going to have Nick Redfern on. I mentioned this before, next week. And he talks about assassinations. And he sees a link between a lot of assassinations, whole group of assassinations from Kennedy through Dorothy Kilgallen, through Martin Luther King up to John Lennon. And not that they were all assassinated by the same secret group or anything like that. But the link is that all of these assassinations damaged freedom in this country. and damaged freedom in our hearts in one way or another, especially in the Lenin case.
Yeah.
And you had a precog of Kennedy's, but you also had a precog of another one, didn't you? Martin Luther King's.
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. For weeks before it happened, I used to lay out of school so I could listen to him talk. Cause unfortunately, my daddy was Klan, and I wasn't allowed to listen to that man, but I did. I was totally enamored with Dr. King. And for weeks, 3 or 4 weeks, I kept having the same nightmare over and over. And there's gentlemen standing on a balcony in a motel looking down, and he's dead. And it happened. It happened. It happened. The gentleman, in fact, I remember a clip on TV and Walter Cronkite talking about it. And they showed a static photograph, and it was what I had seen in my dream, where the gentlemen are leaning on the railing, looking down. And he was gone.
My word. My word.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember. I didn't have, as I say, I don't have that kind of thing very much, but I sure remember those assassinations. Boy. I knew Robert Kennedy too. I knew the world was changing, and my father was friendly with Lyndon Johnson, and one of my uncles was in Texas politics, and so it was very close to us what had happened, and it's a very sad memory. But now there's other precogs. Tell us about the buildings.
911. Yeah, that was several years worth of dreams, and it was many years prior to the event. I would see planes crashing into really tall buildings and didn't know why. And part of me wondered if it's because my uncle died as a pilot, and he crashed into a mountain before I was born. And I wondered if it was just he was visiting.
Wait a minute. What do you suppose that might, it, could that be connected somehow with the Fire Mountain?
It could be.
Tell us about tell us about the Fire Mountain briefly.
My oldest son used to wake up screaming and get up and paint. And he painted faces of grays with super pointy chins and very bulbous round heads. And he painted pictures that were always orange, red, yellow, black, and brown. And he called it Fire Mountain. And there would be flames around it and coming off. We didn't know what it was or where it was. He just kept saying, Mommy, it's a place, it's a place, it's a place. And he died 20 years ago. And I found his pictures a while back in storage, the painting.
Uh-huh.
And on the back it says Fire Mountain. Don't know where it is.
Fire Mountain, and your uncle crashed into a mountain and would have.
Yeah, he did.
There's some kind of
Army Air Corps.
Some kind of weave in all of this that we can't quite see, I think, but I can't be sure. But anyway, let's go back to 911.
Sure. I kept having the same dream over and over, the planes crashing in. And when it happened, I homeschooled my children at the time. And my daughter was special needs and couldn't get the help she needed in a public school way back then. And we were watching the news on, and I thought, oh, my gosh, that plane just hit the building. That pilot either, he must have had a heart attack or be drunk. And when it happened again, I thought, oh, they're just doing replay. The poor man just, he couldn't help it. He ran into that building. I hope everybody's okay. And my daughter went running into her room and brought a notebook out and goes, but Mommy, that's the picture you drew a long time ago. And there were the two towers and the planes hitting the towers in the exact places they were hit. She still got my notebook.
Yeah.
We still have the pictures. It was creepy. It was just, I don't want to see this stuff. I don't want to know this stuff. I mean, who am I going to tell? And who's going to listen anyway?
A lot of people with confirmed precogs feel the same way. You know, these people who make money going out and making predictions that never seem to come true are one thing. But people who do are in the hidden world of precogs are very quiet about it mostly. So, you know, we've had a few on the show because I know they're real, and I sniff them out. So I was, it was one of the reasons I was glad that you were willing to come on. And the inevitable question is in, I wouldn't ask it, but I know my listeners want to know, are there any precogs floating around now, like about COVID or anything like that in your head?
Yeah, there are. And that I really don't want to say it out loud because I don't want to go to prison.
I understand that. That's not the only, you're not the only person who has answered this question in that way. And it's a road that people don't want to go down now.
Threats were made and carried out. And the people they think did it didn't do it.
I don't want to go down this path because there are people on the inside who I know you are the real deal.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
If they're pushing back against you saying anything of this, then we have to respect that for your sake.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I'm not going any further down that road.
Thank you.
Are there any precogs that you can talk about that are less incendiary?
Well, they're coming back, and it will be mass sightings, and specifically Buffalo, New York. I do not know what that's about. I was told about that, but by an entity that took me.
Well, I don't know either.
They're definitely coming back, and there will be mass showing. And it's not this evil, horrible horror movie scenario. It's, we're here. You're screwing up bad. You're destroying your world. We've already done this. Don't do what we did.
Yeah, I have a feeling that might be the case. I've often thought that they might have kind of been down this road that we're on right now. And maybe it's a road that all intelligent species go down. And, you know, the ones that come out on the other side are much changed and chastened by the experience. But, you know, and I can't tell you how many witnesses feel the same way. I do, too, that they're coming back. And yet they never seem to come back. There was a big thing about them coming back in February of 2020. Didn't happen.
Oh, and really?
Yeah. Well, it was under the surface. It was under the radar. A lot of contactees were having this sense that this would happen. And
right.
In my own experience, a lot of direct contact does happen during February. So I thought maybe it would, but it didn't.
I don't have a date. I just know that they're very adamant about they're already here and that more of them are coming back.
Yeah, well, they're already here, all right. Anyone who has an infrared camera and points it at the sky at night is going to definitely see them. They don't. They can't help emitting heat, even though they don't not necessarily visible light.
Right.
In fact, one of the scientists I know has thought about this a lot, thinks that if they're going to be invisible, then they must emit heat. And
oh, wow.
Because he thinks that what they're doing is they're bending light, and in order to do that, you have to generate a gravity field, and that will cause the conservation of energy means that there will be heat associated with the generation of the gravity field.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Yeah, so that all kind of comes together. All right. Now, you're going to, let's start to talk about the roughest stuff, the pregnancies and the babies.
Yeah. The first one was in 1976. I was 19 years old. And I was pregnant. And I was going to the doctor. And I was taking prenatal vitamins. And I had felt the very first little flutter. And the morning after the flutter, I got up. And I knew I wasn't pregnant anymore. It wasn't showing. I was tiny. I was like, you know, 102 pounds. I was teeny. So 5 months, it showed. And I went to my doctor, and he said, you're not pregnant anymore. And I'm like, how the heck did I lose a baby, but I'm not bleeding, and I haven't miscarried? And he said, and I quote him, your body must have absorbed it.
A five-month-old fetus.
Yeah.
That's not unknown, but it's very unusual.
Yeah, well, it happened. It happened.
Unless it's not what happened to the fetus.
True. I knew it was a boy. I knew it was going to be a boy. I knew it. But, yeah, it just disappeared.
Ann and I were shown a baby, and a lot of people are shown babies. Have you ever been shown a baby?
Yeah. Two of them, two different times. They were stringy-haired. They looked like what would be like a six-month-old, maybe, you know, just longer and not all, you know, fetal position. But they were like gray and human-featured. They were, and they were not flesh tone as Americans know, flesh tone, whether it's white, yellow, red, brown, whatever, black. It was a gray color. It was a light gray color. And they said that those are there, that was mine, and I had to hold them. And I did not want any part of that. No part of that, but it was one of those things, if you don't have a choice, you're going to hold this baby. When they hand it to you, you hold it. And it looks at you, and it's got bigger than usual eyes, but they're not as big as the grays. And they're not black. They're blue.
They're mixed human, do you think?
Yes, they are. Well, yes, they are.
Yeah. Well, let's go now to the six grays standing around your bed.
Yeah. I was living in just off Lake Erie, 2 blocks from Lake Erie, and I went to bed, and I woke up in the middle of the night, and there's six roughly four foot tall grays, and one 6 or 7 foot, it was very tall, another very tall, thinner one. And they're like, let's go. And I'm like, oh, hell no. Oh, hell no, I'm not going with you. I am so done with this. And they're like, oh, I don't think so. And this sound, like, kind of noise, and gold light, like, shot off of me around me. And I was clutching the mattress, I swear, on one side of my right hand. And it stood me up. And then onto my feet on the floor between two of the shorter gray. And they took a hand off either side of their bodies and they pointed them down towards my hip, like on an angle, and took me out and said, yeah, let's go. And they didn't touch me. They just pointed at me. And I moved within this gold looking light out the wall and straight up. They drop, and they don't always bring you back nicely. They will drop your butt. You give them a hard time, they will drop you.
Yeah.
None too politely.
What do you think it's all about, ultimately?
Good Lord. They just want us to straighten up and fly right. I don't know how to put it any other way. They don't want us to do what they've done to themselves. They have bred out emotion. They have bred out, they can't procreate on their own. Or at least that's what I've been told. They need us to help them. They would like to have emotions again. They've watched us, but they would like to breed out the worst of them. Does that make sense? That's what I was told.
They ended up with no emotions. I think a lot of the ones I've been with, I can certainly annoy them. That's for sure. But then I annoy everybody. That's nothing unusual for me. My wife used to say, Whitley, I actually married the most annoying person I've ever known. I don't know why. Why did I do that? I must be insane. So here we are with this. This is your life we've been talking about.
Yes, it is.
And have you seen babies and children?
Yes, I have. Yes, I have.
Tell us about that.
Babies and children that are mine?
Yeah.
I held two of them. I also had an experience in Erie. This is the same night that the light picked me up. I met a very light silver-colored entity that had bright blue eyes and told me, I'm yours. I am the first baby. I'm yours. And he said, I'm here to protect you, and I will always make sure you're safe. And I need to tell you some very simple things, that thought is real. Thought is real. That you are creating your entire world and universe, whether it's good or bad, that thought is real. That we really shouldn't be eating animals because it's like consuming ourselves. And I'm not pitching vegetarian veganism. I'm just
they've said that to me too, and I have a lot of trouble because I, when I go vegetarian, my body does not like it.
Oh dear.
Yeah, it's unfortunate but true.
I did do it. I take B12.
Well, I eat very little meat. I eat as little meat as I can.
I can't tolerate it anymore. But they told me, and it was a he. I know it was a he. Even though you can't distinguish gender when they come, you can't distinguish gender. It's just a gut thing.
I get a feeling of maleness or femaleness.
Yeah, that's it. He told me that cats and dogs had been kind of altered so that we could interact better, and so that they could give us compassion we weren't necessarily getting from other humans. And that we needed to be careful how we treated them. And that we do come back.
Yeah.
He told me we come back over and over until we learn the lesson.
And it's hard. It's a long, hard journey. My whole life has become focused on spiritual growth for myself and anyone who will engage with me in my work and building strong souls so that we can ascend.
Yeah, absolutely.
I saw my wife ascend. I saw it happen. And it,
oh my God.
Listen, it's worth doing, folks. Believe me. Worth doing.
It certainly is. It certainly is. Absolutely.
Annie had a miscarriage, just a lot of blood and nothing, no baby, no.
Oh, my.
And then about 6 weeks later, we were going to dinner and driving out of the cabin. And we were driving along. There was a kind of break and we were talking about a baby. And then I realized we were 25 minutes late. We were going to miss the dinner reservation, and the restaurant was very popular. And It was just shocking. And I realized what had happened, that they had come up out of the ground in the garage with this baby. I remember the incident very well. Now, I never referred to it again with Annie in her life. But I'm going to end with this little story. This just happened last week. I meditate at night and at 11 and at 3, and the 3 o'clock meditation, for whatever reason, is very wanted, and I wake up. If I don't wake up, I will be waked up. The other night, I was waked up in the most haunting way. I heard a voice, a boy's voice, say, either in my mind or in the air, or both, I can't say which, "Daddy, have you not forgotten me?"
Oh.
Yeah. How do you feel about those babies? Where are they?
I don't know. I wish I knew. I wish I knew.
Me too.
You're
going to say you miss them.
I do. You don't. You can't be pregnant and not miss it. I mean, you can't be pregnant and not grieve it when it just disappears and there's nothing there. And through the last four, there were 5 altogether. In the last 4, there were obvious holes in my, above what would be my uterus, that were healed over. I have scars, and there's nothing could have made them. I had 7 children naturally. I didn't have C-section.
Wow. So, yeah, you wouldn't have scars there.
No, but I do. I do. I have proof. I have proof. I have medical proof. I have the documentation of being pregnant. I have the documentation of I had ultrasounds of 2 of them. There were ultrasounds. And then nothing.
You know, this is hard for a man, but for a woman, this is very hard. And I have to say that I thank you and respect you for talking to us about this so openly, because it is a hard experience. I can only hope that it's for the best. And I know that many of us have children, and some of them must be adults by now, and living in a completely different way in an unknown reality.
Yep.
But that does not mean we don't want them and love them. And right now, you and me and all the Close Encounter witnesses listening who have the same thing, such children, we put our arms around our children in our hearts and in our imaginations, and we hold our lost children to our hearts. Thank you, Lynette, very much for being with us on Dreamland.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Dreamland. Be sure to tune in again next week. Dreamland is brought to you by UnknownCountry.com and its family of subscribers. Unknown Country was founded by Ann Streber. Our news editor is Matthew Frizzell. Our coordinator is Amy Safrankova. Whitley Streber is your Dreamland host, and I'm your announcer, Ted Alexander. Thank you for listening.